Welcome to this podcast of Inforum, a division of the Commonwealth Club of California, by and for people in their 20s and 30s, with a mission to inspire debate around civic issues. To learn more about events or membership, join us online at www.commonwealthclub.org/Inforum. You can also find Inforum on Facebook, MySpace, and LinkedIn.
Good evening. Welcome. I'm Caroline Moriarty-Sachs. I'm the director of Inforum and your moderator for tonight's program, The New Rules to Getting and Keeping a Job You'll Love, with Ryan Coonerty, author of The Rise of the Naked Economy and co-founder of Next Space, a co-working and innovation space, Pat Flynn, head of recruiting at Twitter, Anna Binder, who spent most of her career as head of HR in fast-growing tech, but is now a board member at with Emerge California, looking to get more progressive women elected. And last but not least, Rick Von Felt, head of learning and development at Atlassian and a workplace futurist. Our panel of career coaches and modern job experts will help you craft your most hireable self and conquer the evolving job market. So let's get right to it. We'll tackle plenty of the tactical and practical parts of the job search, but first I want to start with a little bit about how the world of work and what the workplace is different now than it was, say, 5 years ago, and how it'll be different 5 years from now. And Rick, I'll have you kick that one off.
All right. Well, I don't need to tell anybody. We all know that things are changing very, very quickly. It's why many of us are probably finding ourselves in interesting situations in our careers, or we intuitively know that things are about to change. So we did some research about 2 years ago and ultimately put out a book called The 2020 Workplace. And in it, we took a look at what life was going to be like inside of the company from the year 2020 onward. And we looked at four main shifts that I think are dramatically changing the workplace and therefore will dramatically change how you think about your career and how you start managing your career. And a lot of these changes we know, but I don't think many of us realize how fast all of them together are causing such a disruption. Number one, starting around the area of technology. We know that technology is disrupting everything. It is disrupting everything that we do in the human resources world, how companies are thinking about future employees and where they're going. Number two, the concept of social. Understanding the impact and the power of social media, and how we become social interactors and the way social will get us jobs in the future dramatically change how we will get jobs and think about our careers in the future. Number three, globalization and the shortage of talent around the world. It's one of the most ironic things that there are so many people out there looking for jobs, yet within the corporate workspace there are over 3 million open requisitions in the United States alone. So there's this interesting mismatch happening between what companies need and what we are taking the responsibility and the power to create in ourselves, because we have relied on the company to take care of our skills, and those rules are off the table. And then lastly, this interesting intersection of what's going to happen with the millennial generation. We all have heard about them. We can have lots of debated discussion. The reality is that it'll be the first time in 100 years that a generation of this size has risen up, become more than 50% of the workplace, and ultimately, based upon their values, will come into the workplace and say, this is how we want to see work done differently. The rest of us, if we're a millennial, 25% of the population, if you are Generation X, 25% of the population, we will, for the first time, as an older generation, become a part of the millennial world and the way in which they work. So we have to be ready for that. We can't say, oh, they're not playing our rules anymore. Things have changed so very quickly. We put all four of those things together, and it says that how we get jobs, how we think about our careers, completely very different than it has been for the last 40 years.
Rick, before I come over to Ryan, give us a couple of examples of what skills exactly do these millennials have that we all need to catch up and get ourselves if we're going to compete in this new market.
Well, we all should have one hand on our mobile phones, and it should be buzzing in our pockets right now, because that is indeed the amount of social stream that comes into our lives and that we push out in the new world. And we can say it's a millennial trait, but those of us that want to play a part of the new world understand that social and our connection to people who will introduce us to the careers and the jobs and the skills that we need for the future are so critical. So whether you like it or not, we have to be connected into those things. You have to have clout ratings, for example. If you haven't gone on to clout.com and understood what your social rating is today by adding in your Facebook, your Twitter scores, the number of hits that you get from your name being present in the internet, if you don't understand your social impact, you will lose out to other people that are doing that. And for example, if you don't go on to Twitter and understand what's happening on Twitter, and I say that not only because we have Pat here, but just as an example, Facebook is old by now. And there are new technologies. Your profiles on LinkedIn and understanding what's happening in the social atmosphere via Twitter or other types of things are critical to the future. It is how we are finding people for the jobs that we have open and how you will need to get up to speed, for example, to be ready for all of this change that's happening.
It sounds a little bit intimidating, but it sounds like networking in a modern world. It sounds like you have to do it. Ryan, can you tell us a little bit about how you understand a career and job to be different now than it was and what we can expect looking forward?
Sure. Well, one is I'm hoping by sitting next to Pat, my clout score is rising by the minute.
Let me say, proximity. I think I'm in trouble because I've never heard of clout.
You're in trouble.
That was the note that I made.
So one is, I think Rick's right. Work is fundamentally changing. We have to accept that it's being disrupted at every job that you think, whether it's safe or not, is fundamentally going to be different in now or in 5 years from now. And it's going to require a different set of skills and a different mindset. One of the things to remember, though, is that this is the idea of work being a place, work defining who you are, work providing you health care and retirement and days with time off and casual Fridays and holiday parties and all the things that we've sort of wrapped around work is a very recent phenomenon, and it's going to be a very short-lived phenomenon. What work has always been has been the exchange of your knowledge and skills for it in trade for either money or someone else's knowledge and skills. That's what work is. That's what it will continue to be. The question is, how do you now trade your knowledge and skills going forward? And what we think and what we see every day in our 9 NextSpace locations and our 2,000 members are people who have figured out a way to have work for them. The old system was nice if you were looking for that security, if you were looking for that hierarchy. It did not work for the baby boomers who are aging out of the workforce and now, but still want to work or have to work, but want to spend time with their grandkids and want to take care of aging parents. It didn't work for young families who wanted to spend time with their children. It didn't work for young people who want flexibility. So we've romanticized this old vision of a job, but with forgetting all the bad parts. Now let's reimagine a new way to work, where you can, if you have skills, you are no longer limited to selling those skills in a 30-mile radius of where you live. You can now sell them globally.
Give us an example. It sounds like you're talking about going beyond the understanding of a 9-to-5, 40-hour-a-week, Monday-through-Friday job. Give us a couple examples of what that could look like for some people in the room.
Sure. So one of my favorite examples that we talk about in the book is a guy called Jay Nichols, who's an expert in sea turtles. And in the old days, if you were an expert in sea turtles, you went and got the one job at Scripps to be the sea turtle person at Scripps. To him, that sounded like too much of a 9-to-5 job, right? And so what he says is, look, in a global world, I am a specialist in sea turtles. If you get the world big enough, there's a large enough market that it can support my life. So he lives out here on the California coast. He surfs every day. He has his own nonprofit where people fund him to do his research. He applies to large institutions to fund his research. He models for The Gap. He sells t-shirts and other things along the coast. And he has the life on the terms that he wants. That was not possible 10 years ago in the old way to work. So many of us will have to find our own sea turtle, the thing that we can take out into the global world. And it doesn't have to be one particular thing. I'll talk about that a little bit later. But if you can find that skill or knowledge or experience and find the platforms from which to grow, you're free from that 9-to-5 half-hour soul-crushing commute, the having to sit in your office and not be able to pick up your kid after school on a Tuesday afternoon. Those are all fundamentally important things that define prosperity. You need to define your prosperity, then start building your work in a way that supports that prosperity in your life.
Sounds great. We're in.
Totally.
But, and Rick mentioned it, and I saw it actually mentioned by somebody else in your book, that we said that the world of work is changing, but people aren't. So can you each give a couple of examples of, and maybe we'll start with you, Ryan, what kind of skills does it take to be a sea turtle expert / surfer / model other than a model's buddy?
Yes, it helps to look like him.
How about some practical skills?
Without a doubt. But I think what he understood was that he could sit there and write papers and do research like every sea turtle researcher who has ever come before. But he said, I need to understand marketing. I need to understand, he needs to understand grant writing. He has enough skills. He's writing a book on oceans and the brain. He is promoting himself. He's connecting himself. He is a global brand of being the sea turtle guy. All of us at some small level need to figure out how we have our brand. And one of the things I think that's important is that just because you're friends with somebody on Facebook, you're linked to somebody on LinkedIn, doesn't mean you're friends with somebody you're friends with them in real life or connected to them in real life. We need real communities. We need real connections. And whether that comes at an event like this where you talk to the person next to you, whether it comes in a co-working space or in a coffee shop or wherever you find community, it's increasingly important that you have that network that you can draw upon, not only to find a job or to find a gig or to refer people to, but also because you're going to have to pull together fast teams around projects dispersed, right? If no one's paying you for your time when you work, they're going to pay for you for your skills. Part of one of the skills that you're going to need is be able to pull together teams to accomplish work.
That was a lot of skills.
That's a lot of
skills.
Write
them all down.
Sorry. Yeah.
That's good. Pat, can you talk to us about, give us a couple examples of skills that you think you're noticing people need more now and now to function in a modern office, or name two skills that you think that we're going to need in 5 years that we didn't need 5 years ago? And I'll ask you the same question.
Yeah, I would say, you hear the term tech savvy, right? And it doesn't mean you have to be a programmer to get a job at Twitter or anywhere else, but you need to be familiar enough with technology where you're not asking for help all the time and you can get stuff done, right? It's being familiar with Microsoft Outlook and being able to run spreadsheets, you know, pretty easily. Those are simple things to learn, but those are core skills that you're going to have. You can't be afraid of technology. You just, and it really is simple to use. And don't be afraid of Twitter, right? I mean, that's a bit of a shameless plug there, but it's really not that hard to use. But just get out there, use those things, and, you know, otherwise you're going to feel overwhelmed as though you just can't keep up in the workplace. So get familiar with those products, and you'll do fine. And then, you know, in the future, we were talking about this earlier, I think everyone is going to have a higher and higher level of knowledge and sophistication when it comes to technology. A good example of this is my old company was an e-commerce retailer, and we hired a lot of graphic designers. And traditionally, you know, you could separate the folks who built the websites and, you know, the graphic designers to come up with the design and the pictures and the layout and all of that. Well, what I saw in, two very short years was emerging of those two skills into one position. So the good graphic designers, the ones that we wanted to hire, had enough base knowledge and how to put together, you know, a website, put the building blocks together. They needed to know enough about programming, you know, to get that job done and, you know, be able to build a website on their own versus having two people do that. So now it's literally one person. And I see that happening in other areas, you know, in companies as well. So it really pays to keep up on even the simplest software programs out there. And they are getting simpler for consumers to use. So don't be afraid of them. Take a class now and then. And you'll find you'll probably surprise yourself as to how easy it is to pick that stuff up.
Anna, do you want to jump in and share any of the characteristics or traits, the skills that you find that the successful people in the workplace have right now?
Yeah, so I'm always hesitant to focus too much on technology because I think we live and breathe in this bubble a little bit. So I'm going to try to step away from it, but I'm going to cue off of something you said. Today versus 10 or, you know, let's say 10 years ago, the access to information, the ability to self-teach on almost any topic, whether it is a piece of software or, what did you say, sea turtles, becoming a gap model, whatever it is, the information is out there. So if you can figure out a way to translate something that you have innate interest in that comes from a deep place inside you, your sort of personal passion, and finding out what is going on out there and how you can gain some skills and learn some practical applications that make that passion useful, that to me is, I think that's the fastest path to change to a useful skill.
Earlier tonight, Rick, you were telling us some of the places that we can go online or in person to gain some of these skills. Lay it on us. What do we do?
Well, so let me give one piece of advice. So how many folks, when you were younger, were in Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts? Okay?
That's a lot of people. So we did
that when we were younger. And then somehow when we became at some level where it either wasn't interesting enough anymore for us or we reached the pinnacle of being a Eagle or something like that, we stopped. The future is about returning to being a Boy Scout or a Girl Scout. And we imagine that the future is going to be, many of us are going to have virtual uniforms where we will have all of these mini micro badges of things that we will have accomplished and learned and proven skill on. So remember how it used to be when we would get Boy Scout badges. You would have to do something, show something, and demonstrate something to somebody. You would just sign off on it, you'd get a little badge, and you would stick it on your little uniform. Well, that's how it's going to look in the future. We are going to start having virtual resumes that will have micro or mini badges of little micro skills that we will have developed along the way. All of those together create amazing traveling virtual resumes, not so much based on knowledge anymore. Remember, knowledge is now accessible through the internet. We can access knowledge. It's now how you can apply those skills against some of those different badges. And if you want a really perfect place to go do this, one of the things that we have all of our folks in our company do is go to Android or Apple, go take a look at what were the top 10 paid and unpaid apps in 2013, download them all, and understand why they were the top-selling apps. So they become the top-selling apps for a reason. They're indicative of where what we're learning, what we're doing, what we're applying. And if you look at a lot of them right now in 2013, it was all around social collaboration. So even at Atlassian, where we build software for coders and computer sharing and social collaboration, you have to understand how social collaboration is starting to happen. We will work together in teams. None of us anymore in the future will do one thing all by ourselves. We'll work together, we'll be trading things, we'll be online, we'll be sharing docs, we'll be coding together, working on things together. And you have to understand social collaboration through technology. You can find those by just keeping up to date on what some of those new apps are. That's free and easy. I mean, you can go to the free ones and get them as an example.
But give us a couple of websites where we can actually go and take classes or learn how to build these specific skills.
Lynda.com is the rage right now. Lynda.com. It's sort of little bits and pieces. You go on, pay $15 to $25, sometimes free, for a two-hour webinar course. And they have a whole variety of things that we'll see coming out more and more. I think a lot of learning is going to become more chunked into small, bite-sized things. We see it in online universities that are coming out as well, but I think we're going to see a lot of those. Another great startup in Palo Alto is a company called Curious.com. Really amazing content. And if you have something that you think you are really good at, a micro badge that you could teach somebody in an hour, you can create a video, upload it, and be paid for every time somebody goes and takes your course. Again, understanding what your micro badges are and what you're going to do to contribute to this new world of micro knowledge, but also getting it yourself, constantly learning.
So I just want to jump in here for a second.
Yep.
You asked us for specific sites. Mm-hmm. I actually don't want to give you specific sites. Find out what, you know, how to learn how to code for free. Google it. There will be 10 companies, 10 sites that come up that you can spend an hour and learn a little bit about learning how to code versus me providing a name of a company.
Got it.
And may I also say, real quick check-in, where is it that most of you go and find something online when you're looking for new information? All right. Go to the millennial generation. Some of us are out there in the audience. Where do millennials go the first thing when they're looking for new information? It's not Google. It's YouTube. The world, the younger generation, is moving more and more to visual video search. So to that point, go to YouTube. Type in any topic. There are millions and millions of how-to videos for free where you can learn something in an hour by just going to YouTube, and you also get used to non-rote, written styles of learning, which is how things are going to evolve over time as well.
So let's get practical for a few minutes. I wanted to start by what the world of work is going to look like in the future and what skills we need to have, because it seems that the job search process, how we find a job, how we pick a job, how we know what job is for us, seems to be pretty antiquated. Rick, you talked about these badges that we're going to go online and procure, this consulting job that may have given us a particular skill or a lesson that we learned in an online class, but the WordDoc 97 resume that I attach an email to a potential employer doesn't really allow us to put virtual badges on it. So what are ways online documents? Is that 97, maybe start with, does that 97 WordDoc resume template still apply in the modern world of applications? Anna, you're shaking your head now.
No.
It's a part of an equation, but is it the only thing where we rely upon a resume that is in written form that gets into somebody's inbox that we never read? Won't be working anymore. In fact, today, if you don't have a .com page with your name on it, or some way a .me page where I go in and type in and the first Google hit that I get is your name, where you have controlled the page with your information, then you are empowering all sorts of other organizations to create a profile around you. So job number one, go get your .com name, get a website up for $4.99 a month, or go to a .me page, but start creating your own online visual place that corroborates with resumes, with LinkedIn, with all sorts of profiles, because it's going to be this combination method that I think we'll be looking at as well.
And I can see that high-tech companies and definitely the top 10 most desired companies in the Bay Area may not be reading the resume that we are all attaching to that email that we are sending in with our application. But many companies still require that resume template, still want you to send in a cover letter, a resume, and an attachment. How do we reflect these skills that we've all gone out and learned and built in the current templates that are required for applications?
I think you put it in the descriptions of your jobs. So the first thing that recruiters are going to look at, you know, do you have the experience that we're looking for? And that's a place to do that. You know, you've facilitated these meetings, you drove market share by 20%. You know, they'll know, they'll infer that you've got those innate skills to get the job done. So it's a bit of a turnoff, I think, for recruiters when you write a cover letter that's very lengthy and, you know, talking to your skills. Well, just, you know, we can determine if you've got the skills based on the experience. Just tell us what you've done. You know, that's what we'll look at first.
Give me an example. So in that cover letter, you want to see, I doubled sales at a, you know, in a particular project at this last company, or give me some tangible examples of what you want to see.
I think you can divide the world of recruiters into people that like cover letters and don't like cover letters.
How do I know which one you're working with?
You know, you're asking all the right questions. I don't like cover letters. I like to see accomplishments and achievements and skills associated on a well-crafted resume. I don't want to see a 1997 template. I want it converted into a PDF. And I see it as a document that is a reflection of you. I agree that it is one piece of the full recipe, and you need to have an online presence, including a LinkedIn profile and a robust network and yada, yada, yada. But I like to see a resume. I like to see what you did to put words and ideas and concepts and your history and your personal story and your font and your layout. And I think it says something about you.
Give me an example of a resume that you saw maybe recently that really stood out, something that you saw and you're like, oh, that person that hit the nail on the head, something that they did.
I saw one this morning. Somebody sent me their resume and said, can I have some feedback? The second sentence in her summary of herself was, I am known within my company for launching successful products. I said, you know, that is simple, it's clean, it's confident, it's something that I want to touch. It's something that I want to have.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about the search. I think it's probably divided into people who know what they want and have to figure out how to find it. But let's start with people who want to make a transition and don't know exactly what they want. I think, again, the 1990s rule about how to find a job is you go online and type in a title, or you go online, type in a title, a region, and a salary that you're looking for, and then apply to every job that returns in the search.
So, I think one of the things to do is to update our vision of a job and who's going to be employing us. So right now, 30% of the American workforce is not a W-2 employee. Some sort of part-time, temporary, contractor, some kind of employee. The estimates are by 2020, it'll be 40%, and probably higher, actually. So if half of you are looking for jobs, half of you will not get a W-2 job. So the question is, for the half that do, and my guess is that number is going to climb consistently over time. So in 2025, 2030, it'll be a vast majority of the American public will not have a traditional job as we've all defined it, or many of us have grown up knowing it. So how do you then find those jobs, create the businesses, create the consulting opportunities, find the platforms that allow you to earn the money that you need to leave your life? Is as important. I mean, I think you need to think of yourselves as your own company, as well as a candidate for a job. Because even if you get that job, it's the average millennial stays at a job 2 years or 2.5 years,
yeah,
maybe.
Not even.
So the expectation is that you're not going to be at that job for more than 2 years. So you're going to be constantly searching. It may feel like a job, but it's not a real job in the way many of us thought about it. So.
So where do you search? Do you go to Craigslist.com to look for my non-W-2 job? Do you find a company that might be looking for a consult position and literally look at their job board on their company website? Or is there something else out there?
So, the way I think many of us get jobs is through a network, right? And that network is going to be how you, and it's not just a job, right? You have to get, decouple the idea, the concept of the job and the office and the TV shows, Mad Men that we all watch, from just work. I'm trading my skills for money. And so I think there are online platforms and Elance, Mechanical Turk, and all these other places that allow you to shop your skills globally as a contractor. Uber is allowing you to shop your skills as a driver in your car in different cities. And so you are going to be engaging in that, and I think so it's going to be through your real network and then through the kinds of virtual networks that we talked about, where you're going to be able to pull together and either offer employment opportunities or find employment opportunities. But you have to wrap your mind around the idea that there's not going to be a company that's going to hire you, take care of you, train you, and do all these things for any long period of time.
So how do you actually take advantage of these online networks that we've been building, these LinkedIn profiles with our connections and our Facebook friends and our Twitter followers? Do you literally post one day, looking for work, here's what I want to do? Or do you pick 5 people in each of those networks and email them and ask them about their job? Anna, do you have suggestions about how to take advantage of these connections?
So I have 2 or 3 very specific suggestions around this. The first is, obviously you need to build the network. So I'm going to assume that you're being promiscuous with your social networking and that you have some network and you're constantly building it. So I'm not going to talk about this. But the first is, I think, before we look outward, I think it's important to look inward. And I like to say, if everything is important, then nothing is important. So figure out what is the most important thing. Make your long list of your fantasy job and all the characteristics that, you know, that would bring you to the moon to have in a work situation, whether it is in a traditional 9-to-5 or in a hodgepodge of Gap model plus
sea turtle.
But whatever, make that list. And you know, you can start with 100 things, but then what are the 3 most important? What are the must-haves? That will drive your conversations. It will drive write them on the wall, right? Like write them in the wall in the bathroom so you see them every single day. So you stay focused. You don't want to end up a year later having taken a job that has many of the nice-to-haves, but not none of the core must-haves. So that's the first thing. That also, once you have that priority, that allows you to have more, have very specific asks of your network. I've decided, for example, that I want to work, you can make this up, I want to work in the solar industry. I want to work for a company that is pretty well established, that is, you know, sort of not high risk, and I want to do it in within a 20-minute commute of my home. Those are my 3 most important things. I don't know what they are for you, but you need to know them. Once you have that, those 3 things, that will allow you to go to your network and say, I'm looking to make a change, and I'm specifically interested in the solar industry. Can I take you to coffee and just understand your career there? Not can I take you to coffee and talk about how I can get a job at your company, but how can I learn about this? So then my second piece of advice is turning that into, it's a very simple funnel, I believe. And so think of it as if you send 10 emails every week to somebody in your, you know, close or far network, that will lead to 5 responses. People are busy, you might get 5 responses. And the goal is to set up 2 meetings every week, right? So 10, 5, 2. And if you can only get to 5 emails, then, you know, the funnel changes appropriately. But don't expect to have fruitful meetings if you're not sending those 10 emails. And then each one of those meetings that you have will, you know, assuming that you show up well, you're organized, you've done your research, you're passionate, and you're a great, you know, you're at least a good person, right? Like that meeting will turn into, you know, at the end of it, you say, is there anyone else that you know that I should talk to that might be willing to take the time to have me buy them coffee? So that is the path, I think, to, you know, a very specific how to use the social network. The second thing that I want to say is, making a career change is hard and scary, and there's no magic around it. I'm going through it myself right now, and one of the best things that I'm doing that I'm really excited about is something called Reset. I have a group of 10 people. They're all women. They're all sort of quasi at the same level, and all want to make a change this year. We work in different industries. Some of us are friends, but we're not there to be social. We're there to help each other make a career change. We're there to hold each other accountable. We're there to support each other through that change. We meet once a month. There is assignments. There's homework. There's uncomfortableness. We set goals. But I'm 3 months into this, and I'm watching women in this group make change much faster than any of us believed that we could. So I really encourage everyone to set up their own Reset group. The final just thing that I want to tout, everybody has a personal VP of marketing. This might be your mom. Don't call your mom. somebody that you worked with before that thinks you're amazing, that knows you're amazing, that can be very specific about why and how you're amazing. Each time you're going to one of your networking meetings or to a job interview, on the way there, call that person. Say, hey, old boss, can you remind me why you think I'm amazing? I used to do this all the time. Everybody needs a little bit of a boost, right? And you know who your own personal VP of marketing is. So tell them that you're going to use them that way. And I'd love to be that person that gets that phone call for some of the people that have worked for me. Okay, so that was a lot. I apologize for going on. But
no, that's great. I want to tackle one taboo issue And then we're going to come back to the happiness marker. And that issue is that it is hard to find a job if you don't already have a job. So if you have a job, you talked about developing these skills, and a couple of you mentioned that the turnaround from job to job is so frequent, and somebody said earlier that within 10 months of getting a job, you should be building the skills for your next job. But what do you do if, God forbid, you are in that position that you're without a job and looking for a job? You had some great answers earlier. Share a couple of them, please.
Well, just to remind everybody, the new rules. The new rules are that, and I would actually call it the 100-day rule. So once you get a new job, a new position, either internally or externally, you've got 100 days to onboard into your new job. On day number 101, you should be working on what is your next position. It is happening that fast in terms of the way that you are going to need to understand what else you are going to start working on in terms of the skill sets, the people, the networking, the things that you're doing. And what happens, though, is we get into a new job. We're just excited to be there. We get onboarded. We learn the technology. They say in the first year, you just get up to speed and trying to understand it. And in the second year, you actually start to become good at what you're doing. And we think that there will be more years after that. And all of a sudden, it is changing that fast in today's world. And then all of a sudden, you wake up and you find yourself in the middle of a crisis because your job has gone away and you haven't done anything to get ready for the next job. We actually believe that there should be three things going on. It is the job you're doing, the job you're preparing for, and the job you want to do 2 to 3 years down the road. And you are constantly working on the skills on a regular basis. The challenge is, to your point, is what happens, though, if you find yourself out of a job? The worst thing that you can do is not do anything. So immediately, if you don't have a job right now, go do what you want to do. It doesn't matter how, where, or what, but do what you want to do. Because when you come talk to a company, they're going to ask you, what are you doing today? And if you say, I haven't been doing anything for, and, you know, we could talk about numbers here, but a lot of companies will have a secret little rule that will say, if you haven't been doing anything for 90 days, we may not talk to you. Because we want to know that you're doing something around what you love to do. It tells us about your ambition, your passion, just the fact that you can't not do it.
What are some of those some things that we could be doing?
Organizing speaker panels at the Commonwealth Club.
Exactly.
Half of the programs put on here at the Commonwealth Club are done by volunteer members. Mm-hmm.
She did not pay me for this.
You know, the other thing we were talking about also is there may be a few out there, but I rarely can find a manager whom, if you walked up to your manager and said, I've got this job, I'm doing it, I hope I'm doing it well, but there is something else I want to learn in the future. And in addition to the job that I'm doing today, I'd like to spend 4 hours this week doing another job. Do you mind if I go shadow somebody else in a complete different department, a complete different role, doing something very, very different, constantly thinking about what you're doing to build your own skill sets? Managers will be like, yeah, as long as you get my job done, that sounds great. But they're sort of proud to be able to lend you to other departments. And also, if you can create that sort of atmosphere in your own sort of company where I'm doing my job, but I'm also spending 4 hours going and doing somebody else's job, just learning, shadowing, building new skills, that will prepare you for the next things. And I tell you also, if you do that inside of a company, they will begin to recognize that you have this ambition, this passion to do something different. You may not land that exact job, but you will get closer to some of the things that you want to do. That's the kind of ambitiousness that we will need to do in the new career market. And let me mention one other thing just to let everybody know what we're up against. The amount of networking and contacts that happen now and as a way to get jobs is just growing exponentially. Millennials today report that they have 1,142 connections in their network that they contact at least once a year, where they reach out and say, how are you, what's going on, how's your career going, what about that new job? 1,142. Those of us who are Generation X or baby boomers have under 200. So that means the new generation is out there networking 6x compared to what we might have been used to in our old careers, through social media, through a lot of things. So we were talking about, how do you get a new job? The first thing is go tell people that you want a new job. even in our generation, it's sort of taboo. We don't want to dare tell people, I want a new job, and I want this kind of, and I, this is what the new generation does. So we have to get out there and tell people, I want a new job, I'm looking for this, these are the kind of skill sets that I have, and we have to be proud about those things. We don't do that enough.
I want to tackle two more areas, one of them very quickly, before we move on to audience questions. And one of them is, we've been talking a lot about social media and online networking, but how to use them in an authentic and personal way, and how also to be professional. Excuse me. One of the, for example, a colleague of mine recently asked, I'm a, you know, working professional with a professional profile, is it uncool to retweet Jay-Z? You know, like, can, how much of yourself can you show online? You're supposed to stand out from a crowd. I'm one of 1,000 applications. I'd like to have a little personality. And how much do you have to be personal? I don't know, throw that
to you. I think you want to do that. I think you want to show the people who you are, because they're going to find out eventually if they hire you. So don't be afraid to be yourself, because that's the only way you're really going to be happy in the job. You don't want to put on a facade to try to get a job. And then you walk into a situation where it's like, geez, maybe this really wasn't the right thing for me. Then you're going to be miserable. Then the company has to deal with the situation where, you know, it was a mishire, and it's very costly, and it just creates a lot of angst. So don't be afraid to do that. Obviously, within reason, right? You gotta put some filter on that. But
Jay-Z is within reason,
right? Oops.
So no red solo cups on Facebook, but retweeting Jay-Z's new album or Beyonce's new album is.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
So. Well, let's move into, and you started talking about it, which is perfect, happiness. So we talked about how to start a search as people are looking for a title or a salary or 20 miles within radius of their home. But how do you find a job that you will find satisfaction in? And what makes people happy in the workplace? And Anna and Pat, I'd like to have you both jump in on that one. Anna, we'll start with
you. So satisfaction in a job. I always tell people, look back at your previous roles and pick out one or two things that you really liked about it. And you know... And try to, you know, match those with any future jobs. I mean, that's how I got to where I am today. And I actually started off out of college as an Army officer, so I was taught how to lead people. Then I got out of the Army, and I fell into executive search, so I recruited people for 7 years before I joined Apple's internal executive search team. Then they asked me to lead recruiting for a couple of divisions at Apple, so I got to combine the hunting or the sales aspect with the leading of people, which was a great fit for me. So it was, it was kind of, you know, by happenstance that all happened for me. But, you know, at the end of the day, you really got to, you know, look at yourself and determine what you like to do, and then find out which roles require those types of skills. I mean, you know, if you're taking a pay cut, you know, just weigh the value of that pay cut, how much it really costs compared to, you know, your happiness every day in that new role. I think you'll find that, you know, it's probably tough to swallow at first, but in the long run, you're going to be happy regardless, because it just doesn't matter to you that much, you know, by, I don't know, having your paycheck be decreased by $100 or $200 a week.
I want to ask the same question of each of you, how you found happiness in your job or made career transitions or tackled many careers, as Ryan's may be. But I want to give you a quick reminder that we're going to be getting to live audience questions in a little less than 5 minutes, maybe like 3 minutes down. So if you have something to ask, you want to formulate your question and line up at either of the microphones in either aisle. And again, as Brandon so eloquently put it earlier, we are looking for single, one-part questions that are actually questions. If you deviate from the plan, I'll get you. So, Anna, you said that you made a career transition recently.
Yeah. So somebody once told me that a good question is no more than 7 words. So I thought I'd just plug that in.
I've deviated.
Challenge for you. You know, I'll tell you about a career transition that I made a couple jobs ago, because I think the definition, our definitions of happiness, hopefully as we grow older and wiser and more lovely, they change, right? What was important to me in the job that I was looking for when I was 25 is different than at the job that I'm looking for when I'm 40. And I think, you know, I'm going to beat the drum, but looking inside and being honest with yourself around what that is for you, regardless of the noise that is around us, because there's a lot of noise and there's a lot of There's a lot of peer pressure. There's a lot of, you know, the 10 hottest companies. But looking inside and really being connected to that. But one of the things, at one point, one of my top criteria, I was a head of HR, right? And I worked in tech, and my career was mostly in fast-growing companies. And I knew that my most important criteria for my next job as the head of HR was an outstanding, what I call top 5% CEO. And I knew that was important for the work that I was doing, right? Like, I care about building culture and working closely with an executive team to create a culture where employees can do amazing things. And so I really took a long road of a year, and I said, I just want to meet great CEOs. And I asked everybody that I know, everybody, who's the best CEO you know? I don't care if he or she is working, what industry they're in, what state they're in, if they're working, if they're looking for a head of HR, if they're interested in meeting me at all. I don't care. I just made a list. And then slowly I started figuring out how to sort of network or, you know, make my way into those people. And let's be clear, they were mostly men. There was one woman on the list. But it was clarifying, right? Because that was my criteria and that was my priority, it was really clear when people said, oh, you're looking to make a change, how can I help, or what are you doing? I'd say, who's the best CEO you know or you've worked for? So it's one thing I did.
We've got about 2 minutes, so I'm going to get both of you in there. And Ryan, we'll start with you. You have an amazing plethora of jobs. Tell us how you've followed your passion or happiness.
The way I'm happy is that I have 4 jobs. The idea of showing up to one job every day is mortifying to me. And in fact, I was saying that my entire career strategy has been that I went to law school and I've been on a desperate attempt to avoid practicing law for 10 years.
Successfully.
So I am not a specialist. I do not have a sea turtle that, you know, speaks to me. I want to do a little bit of everything. And so by bouncing around to all these different jobs, it keeps life interesting. I would also argue I have more job security than people showing up to work in the big buildings down here in the Embarcadero, because if one of my jobs goes away, it's only 1/4 of my income and not my entire income. So by having those, combining all those jobs, which overlap at times, it allows me to be happy. And I think the other piece, and this is a good start to the new year, is thinking about what prosperity means to you. I don't think in this new economy many of us are going to get very rich, to be honest. But I think a lot of us could prosper. And prospering means that at, you know, noon today I was able to be there when my daughter finished her first day of preschool. And to me, there's if I had to commute 40 minutes to make my job, I couldn't do that. And so I'm not willing to make that compromise. I think figuring out what prosperity means to you and then building the work around it that it pays for your life. It's not wealth, it's prosperity.
Rick, do you want to jump in on that before we go to audience questions?
Yeah, you know, for me, I did the traditional career climb, went to Gillette and Dell Computer and then off to Hewlett-Packard, and found myself about 5 years ago in a big role at Hewlett-Packard, but woke up one day and said to myself, you know what, this is not fun. Great company for the right people, but for me, what stirs my passion and my soul, the job that I had as a VP at Hewlett-Packard was not fun. And I learned that because I went off, and there's a most marvelous tool, if you haven't taken it, called StrengthFinder. Go to StrengthFinder.com by Gallup. You can go in, pay $99. It will give you a listing in order of a number of attributes around what it is that you're passionate about. And, by the way, take the full version, not the $4.99 version where you only get the top 5. What you also want to know is what you are not passionate doing. What is it that you avoid doing in your career? And often, to understand what you're passionate at and what you're going to avoid naturally doing will tell you what you should be doing. And when I went and took that, it reminded me again that I love big ideas. I like the future. I like strategy. I like thinking about where things are going to be going. So my 5-year anniversary at HP, I quit. And said, I am going to go off and test this theory that says, do what you love and the money will follow. And I tried it, and it works. And I go back to the same concept with the portfolio world, where I said, all right, I'm just going to go off and do things that I love to do. And if I am so passionate about those things, people will come to me and say, will you do these things for me? And
this works out there in the world. And I think we will see more and more people who will figure out what their passions are. We won't be forcing ourselves to do those things at the bottom of our StrengthFinder list that we don't want to do and we avoid. And we probably show up at work not doing them very well anyway, but somebody tells us we have to be that way. And we figure out what those things are. And so I've been doing the portfolio work, where I've been working as a futurist with a lot of different companies. But then my passion was out there, and somebody came along from Atlassian and said, "You are what we want. Will you come work for us?" And I imagine I will work at this great company for a while, and then who knows what the future will look like. The other thing I would also encourage everybody to go look at the lists of best places to work. If you read those lists, people at those companies have to express why they love working at those companies. And those companies have thousands of jobs that are open today. So go apply for some of those jobs at companies that everybody else loves to work at as well.
Thanks. Well, we're going to go to audience questions now. So as a reminder to our listening audience, this program is presented by the Commonwealth Club's Inforum, Connect Your Intellect. For more about Inforum and its upcoming events, please visit Inforum SF on Facebook, of course on Twitter, and tonight we are hosting The New Rules to Getting and Keeping a Job You'll Love with Ryan Coonerty, the co-author of The Rise of the Naked Economy and co-founder of Nextspace, Pat Flynn, head of recruiting at Twitter, Anna Binder, a board member with Emerge California, and Rick Von Felt, the head of learning and development at Atlassian and a workplace futurist. I'm Caroline Moriarty-Sachs, the director of Inforum. Now let's hear from our audience questions. We are looking for single one-part questions that are actually questions. We'll start with you here on the side.
Thank you. My question is, how do you know this new model of rapid churn of jobs is an effective way to work? And then how do you manage that as a recruiter or a manager?
To manage our time, let's, as best as possible, one person jump in with every answer.
It's interesting. How do we know it will work? I'm not even sure. While I know that's important to us, I have a sense it just is. It is going to be the way things are going to happen. We can hope that we'll be in jobs for 5 to 7 to 10 years in the future, but disruption is happening so fast inside of our companies that companies themselves can't afford to keep people in the same kind of job over and over. They will demand that we change and learn. So therefore, internally, we have to be thinking about what are those rapid churning skills that we need to constantly be thinking about and replacing? If we do our jobs well in learning and development, we're getting our companies ready for what those things are going to look like very, very quickly. But we're also going to be looking for very adaptable learning people to come into our organization that will also naturally learn.
Next question.
Thank you. I'm Daryl Mullins. Ageism, your experiences with it and your solutions for job seekers to it.
Pat?
Yeah, let me take this one. I wouldn't worry about it because, you know, when you walk into Twitter, you see, you know, every demographic represented there, and we really don't care how old you are, you know, all of those other things. It's do you have the experience and, you know, and the motivation, and do we like you? You know, are you a cultural fit? So, yeah, I wouldn't even think about that. Just stay confident and you know, just exude a high energy level, and you're going to do well. So I don't think that's that big of an issue anymore, honestly. And getting back to what we talked to earlier, but make sure that you're familiar with tech products and social media, and it's not daunting by any means.
I think that technology divide, though, will continue to get more scary. So I think that's where experience and age may come into play if we don't keep up with those technologies and social collaboration skills.
When we open our next spaces, we expected it would be all millennials, young coders. We have a wide mix, and the older members of our community are the best members of our community, and in many ways the keys that pull everyone together. So I've seen them, they really thrive in those environments.
Next question.
Awesome. Great feedback, everyone in the panel. My name is Max Mendoza. My question is, transitioning from a life exploratory place, like doing StrengthFinder 2.0, which I have done, into actually finding or receiving that which you've been looking for, whether that's a freelance, you know, client work or an actual job position.
So if you do StrengthFinder, and I have no ties to that, I just think it's a great tool, but there are some books that you can go and buy that will say, okay, therefore, of the 42 different strengths, if you tend to tilt towards a more strategic individual as compared to an operational executor, then there can be certain roles that you look for and you should go look for. You should also align yourself to different types of companies. So, for example, if you are more in the strategic, I don't know what's going to happen, it's okay. We find individuals moving more and more towards dot-coms or startup organizations. But if you are really good at making things happen, getting things done inside, being the organizer, the list makers, your skills will especially be valued in more traditional companies. And you can find some of that out by doing some of that reading.
I think we have just a few more minutes, so let's try and get through the next two questions before so we can get y'all out there. Come on forward to the microphone.
Good evening. How did or do you
all guys... the way forward to the microphone, like it's a candy cone.
How did or do you guys still stay focused and avoid distractions on your road to success?
But multitasking and distractions. You asked us to be paying attention to our buzzing phone in our pocket while paying attention to you and making
so
notes.
So one of the challenges is that work is no longer a place, it's an activity. So I think it means that one of the great things is it means you don't have to drive to an office. One of the bad things means is you're under the pressure to work all the time. I know people in the same way that Anna has this sort of board of directors that develop tools and tactics. So one guy in our company, he works at Nextbase. When he works at home, he walks around the block one direction to go to work, and then when he's done, he turns around and he walks the reverse direction to go back home. Because it's a mental note in his mind that there's going to be a separation between when work starts, when work stops, that this is a time to work, this is a time to be off. And so I think the trick is that the company used to do this for us. Now it's going to be on us to figure out these rules and tools. And a lot of it can be helped by having social pressures or social accountability to find that balance.
You may not want to hear it, though, but I think multitasking and this ability to juggle multiple attention-grabbing things in the world is a skill for the future. A lot of us don't have that. We have been used to doing what we were told when we were kids, take out a toy, play with it, and put it away before you go to the next toy. That is changing very rapidly, not necessarily for the good, one would argue, but it's something to start to immerse yourself into, because I think it's an important skill in the workplace.
So we do have two more questions and barely any time, so let's make them very quick questions. We'll start over here.
I'm a language tutor, and college flyers in colleges used to be easy to get students with that, but no more for some years now. I'm not familiar with social media, just do email. Do you have any recommendations for how I could get students?
I'd find a student and trade your tutoring for them doing the social media for you.
Reverse mentors, absolutely. Yeah. Offer to reverse mentor.
Let's take our last question.
Speaking on the generational terms, what skills do you see millennials lacking?
Fantastic question.
That's kind of a loaded one.
Yeah.
Let's start with you.
No pressure.
Well, it's tough because millennials are generally young, right, just by the term millennials. So there's some inexperience there, so they don't have a lot of skills yet compared to some other folks. But, I'd almost have to think about that one. It'll come to me.
A quick five-second answer.
Empathy. Empathy.
Yeah.
Not the way that we quite understand as a generation, but... as parents, we have replaced empathic skills for our kids. We have jumped in and done a lot of those things for them, and so therefore in the workplace, spending more time to understand using empathy all of the various roles and positions where other people are at inside of the company. So thinking about that inside of the organization as a skill.
And it is the informed tradition to ask all of our speakers the following question to close out our programs. Ryan, Pat, Anna, Rick, what are your 60-second ideas to change the world? But I'll take moderator privilege and tell you each have 30 seconds. because we're running out of time. We'll start with you.
Sure. So, and this is not my idea. Richard Florida is a great economist, says for the first time in human history, we could align our economy with our humanity. That they've been sort of at, in opposition to each other for a long time. So the important thing for, as individuals, as companies, as a society, is to start saying, okay, work's being redefined. Things are being disrupted. What's the world that we want? And let's start with our happiness, our prosperity, our humanity, and build it from there and not let the economy dictate those things to us.
Pat?
I don't have anything as profound because we talked earlier about putting it in regards to job search, but the one thing, you know, the big lessons that I've learned over the years is, you know, don't be too eager to take a job, right? I know it's, if you're unemployed, it may be your first inclination is to take whatever's out there, but make sure it's the right role for you. And that, getting back to what I said about, you know, matching the skill set, what do you like to do? Does the job need that? And then at the same time, making sure that the organization is ready for you. So when you interview, you know, ask, you know, the marketing person, the so-and-so, that all in the second round, so what would you like to see out of this position? What and talk to the future hiring manager. What are those actionable deliverables? What is it that you want me to do in the first year, you know, that defines success? Because I've seen too many mishires over the years where, you know, a role is poorly defined or someone on the interview panel or key coworker for this future employee, you know, is not welcoming or just doesn't believe in the role. And that's just a recipe for disaster. But you on your job search, do your due diligence on the company, go to Glassdoor, and when you interview, ask those tough questions. What is it that you would want from me? And make sure that those deliverables match up for what you want to do.
Anna and Rick, keep it in less than a minute altogether.
I'll give you 20 seconds. I spent all day stressing about this question. I mean, what a big question. I came up with 5 or 6 or maybe 10 different. I even put it on my Facebook to see what people could come up with. And as I'm sitting here and talking to everyone and thinking about my life and my situation, I would like to see us all have more fun time, more leisure time, more happy time. I think that would change the world for the better.
Thank you, Rick.
For me, I'd like everybody to go back and remember what it was like on your first day of school when you were a kid and create that same feeling in your life every day for the rest of your life. It's a bit of excitement, like you're nervous, you're a little bit worried about failure, but you want to try, you can't wait, you don't know who's going to be there. That is how we need to be thinking about learning and want to learn, be excited about learning, be excited about the new things for the rest of our life. And it was fun, and we couldn't wait, and we couldn't wait to see what it was going to be like and who our new teachers were going to be, because a lot of us have stopped learning. And I think the world needs us to keep learning. It will make things fun. And I honestly don't want to have a job in which I'm not having fun in the job. And that involves learning. So I approach it with, what can I learn? And when I stop learning, then I move on.
Well, let's give a big round of applause for our panelists for tonight. Thank you for sharing the new rules to getting and keeping a job you'll love. And this meeting's adjourned.